Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
And gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, January 12, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Hey, sorry to hear about those cowboys.
What can I tell you?
Well, I'm glad we have, hopefully the Super Bowl, my selection would be the Packers and the Colts. Anybody but the Patriots.
You don't like the Patriots?
No.
Isn't that unpatriotic?
Maybe.
Mm.
No, I don't think so. Who is more patriotic than the Green Bay Packers? I mean, my gosh, come on.
Yeah, they're too close to Canada to be patriotic. You know, you get close to the borders like this, it's you got to go for the heartland.
Want
patriotism, you got to go to the heartland. Who's the NFL team from Nebraska, Melody? That would be a heartland patriotic team.
Well, I think any of the Midwest states, heartlands, would be good. They're all good.
Yeah, but they never get to the
except the Cowboys and the Patriots. Anyway, we better move on. We keep getting our foot caught in our mouths today.
Not me.
Not you?
No. I've got, every time I start this program, I tie my foot down to the leg of the desk so it can't get up to where I can put it in my mouth. It's not physically possible.
Well, I have a tendency to do that every now and again, but hey. No foot and mouth today with gold. We have gold, although it's back from its high today, up almost $10 at $1,234. You have silver up six at $1,668. Platinum up 12 at $1,244, along with palladium up seven at $814. And the USDX day trading slightly higher, 0.09 at 92.01. Another beating on crude oil today, down 2.45 at 45.91. And a lot of pressure on the paper markets today, although I do believe they're off the lows of the day. You did have high triple-digit losses today, down 96. At 17,641, the NASDAQ down 39 at 46.64, along with the S&P down 16 also at 2,028, and the 10-year yield Holy mackerel. Down 0.06 at 1.91%. So we had crude oil falling. That was more than 5% for crude oil.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. There's another stock today. I had to laugh a little bit. They were talking about Tiffany's, you know, the jewelry, the little blue box, Tiffany's.
Yep.
And they decided to change a lot of their advertising to accommodate gay marriages, transgender, so forth.
God.
And their stocks dropped.
Good.
Like 11%. I was like, yeah. Okay, good. You know, but when you really look at a lot of these huge companies, they all do. They all support, and it's all for the dollar, the almighty dollar. They'll do anything and everything for that dollar.
That's right.
With no, it just doesn't
They're just
matter.
Whores. That's all they
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
That's all. The money's right. They'll take it. And this isn't a question of right or wrong. Just how do you make the money? And it's one of the dangerous things about all corporations, and it's one of the dangerous things about an economy as compared to a nation. Two different systems of value in the economy. The systems of value are all about the money. They are all about profit and loss. Right and wrong is irrelevant. You get into the nation, entirely different system of values. In the nation, we're thinking about what's right and wrong. We are thinking moral, immoral. What's good for the people, what's not good for the people. In the economy, it's all about profit and loss, primarily for corporations, and right and wrong is irrelevant.
Well, speaking of corporations, you have big banks. They're set to report their earnings this week, and they might have had a little bit of a problem during that last quarter of last year. You have the CEOs of both Bank of America and Citigroup saying that their trading revenues were weak in that quarter. Both of those companies will report the results this week. You also have Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, they're supposed to also report this week. Citi said that they were cutting the bonuses of some of its traders. So if they had such a tremendous year, can't imagine why they'd be cutting the bonuses, although they did have some hefty fines earlier in the year. But, when you have the stock market hitting all-time highs, you wouldn't think of cutting bonuses. And you would also think that if there was a big improvement in the U.S. economy, that you'd have, along with these low rates that continue, if everything was so grand, you would think, that there would be, much bigger demands for mortgages, credit cards, and other types of bank loans. We've seen numbers come out for auto loans and so forth that they're increasing. But, of course, there are those mortgages and credit cards and auto loans, they're also subprime loans, a lot of those. So we'll see how those reports are. And, is this an ongoing thing that we're going to see beginning 2015? We all know that Congress passed the bill last month that led banks to continue to trade in risky assets, as we all know, derivatives. We've talked about that a lot of times on this program. And also the feds also agreed last month to delay the other part of their law, of the Volcker rule that requires banks to sell their hedge funds and private equity stakes. Now they've been given until 2017 to do so. So, and again, that's just because these banks are such on shaky ground that they can't afford to do it now. They make excuses and so forth, but they just can't do it now.
Well, the other thing, if they start selling a particular class of investment mm-hmm. or apparent asset, alleged asset, inevitably the price is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
If all the banks start selling a particular asset class at the same time, you're going to put more of that in the market and the price is going to fall. And I would imagine government's concerned. They don't want to take a chance on knocking a particular asset class down because hard to say where it'd go from there.
Well, maybe they've given them till 2017 because they will go down on their own.
By 2017, we'll see what's even here.
Yeah, they don't have to worry about it at that point.
Yeah, maybe. Forget that. That's old news. Forget all that. That disappeared back in late 2015, early 2016. So 2017, nothing going on here.
I mean, it's going to be an incredible volatile year. And last year there were many predictions and estimates about things going to be falling apart, but it was an election year. They held things together, and after the election, you're gradually seeing things begin to unwind, and it's going to be a very interesting year, and it's even more interesting if you don't have any gold and silver in your portfolios.
No, it'll be frightening if you don't have any gold and silver.
Yep.
It'll go beyond interesting. Interesting is bad enough. You know, I could use a lot more boredom than what I get. If you study this stuff and follow it a little bit, it's not boring. It's interesting, and it's like, oh my gosh, what are they doing next? I could use some boredom. I don't think we're going to get any.
It's absolutely like, not. It's going to happen so quick, so fast. And you know, I was watching. I think it was Jim Rickards. I think it was an older interview. I mean, not that much older, but maybe a month or so ago. And you know, he's still confirming that he's very concerned for bank runs. You know, with all these different the derivatives and the drop in the oil prices and everything, certainly he's forecasting bank runs. So.
Well, apparently a lot of people are thinking about bank runs because. We've got an article here, new banking rules will devastate depositors as your money becomes mm-hmm. theirs, meaning the bankers, in the next crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And what the article is about is that the G20 met in November, December,
mm-hmm.
and they passed new rules mid-November.
Mm-hmm.
They met in mid-November, and they passed new rules.
We've talked about those rules.
Uh-huh. Where your bank deposits will become the property of the bank mm-hmm. if a crisis takes it down. Now, what they're saying here is you're not going to have a chance to participate in a bank run. Right? Worst case scenario, things break down and you find out that your bank is in trouble and you better drive down to the bank right now and get there so you can be in line first to get your deposits out of the bank before it collapses. And that ship will have sailed before you even hear about it. And when it sails, what's going to happen is the banks will assume that your deposits are now equity for the bank. They're going to change your status from that of a depositor to that of an investor in the bank. And as an investor, you're subject to losing your money. All right? Depositors are now responsible for bailing in the banks for any losses during the banking crisis. And the article I'm reading from says, can you say derivatives? And you'd mentioned derivatives. And the author says the derivatives exposure is said to be at a minimum $300 trillion. Now, he's presumably talking about American banks only. Under the FDIC, U.S. deposits of less than $250,000 are protected by federal deposit insurance. However, the insurance funds are entirely inadequate to handle a major collapse because there's only $25 billion in the FDIC. And the derivatives alone are $300 trillion. $25 billion is 2.5% of a trillion, and we have $300 trillion in derivative exposure. And you can see that $25 billion is nothing. It's a triviality. It's not even... It's a fraction of a percent. I mean, a tiny fraction of a percent. There's not enough money in the FDIC to cover this. And so what they've done is pass laws for the G20 nations, or at least G20 has recommended that these laws be passed, and they are apparently being passed throughout the Western nations, that the banks now be allowed to conduct bail-ins as opposed to bail-out. A bail-out is when the bank is going broke, it's too big to fail, and the federal government and or the Federal Reserve gives the bank free money. They are bailing the bank out. A bail-in is when the bank gets into financial trouble. The government and the Federal Reserve said, no, we can't get any deeper into debt. We're out of here. You're on your own, except for what you can get from your depositors. They will be bailed in by being able to take ownership of the deposits and use them. And the first thing they're going to pay off are the derivatives, people holding derivatives. They will be the first ones to get paid off out of your bank account, which is just an extraordinary insult, because these derivatives are by and large nothing but a hustle and a con and a kind of incredible fraud. I think the gross national product for the nation is somewhere around $16 trillion a year. And yet we've got $300 trillion worth of derivatives apparently associated just with American banks. There's other estimates that put it, some people estimate as high as $2 quadrillion in derivatives, and most people go along with $1 quadrillion. And there's only $16 trillion for the gross domestic product of the country. That indicates there are something like 20 times as many, roughly 20 times, the derivatives are roughly in the United States banks, are roughly 20 times the size of the annual gross domestic product in this country. It tells you that these derivatives are just an incredible fraud. Right? That's what they are. They are a fantastic and incredible fraud by means of which the banks have made, and the big banks have made, fortunes. And now, it's coming time where they might have to pay off on these derivatives. And if they do, they are going to lose fortunes and probably be bankrupted. So in any case, the point is G20 nations are going to do bail-ins rather than bailouts. And one of the implications on all of this is that if you have your money in that bank account, if the bank goes into a difficult situation, it's going to just take your money. You're not going to get to the bank in time to withdraw your cash.
Well, I think this time, Al, around with bank runs, I mean, previously, if there is such a thing as an orderly bank run, people had to go to the branch, they had to stand in line, they had to go in, and they had to withdraw their funds, and hopefully you were in the front of the line and not in the back of the line. So if that's orderly bank run, today's world, you have thousands and millions of people sitting at a computer.
Yep.
To where they can withdraw those funds or transfer those funds with a click of a button.
By the time they hear about it on the internet, the bank will
it's going to be way too long. But even still, even if, think about those in the knowledge that this is going to happen. You know, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of people to sit around and reduce, whether it be companies, whether it be, you know, associates and so forth. So it's still very much more dangerous that you can have those funds just disappear totally out of these banks in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. You can bet that the banks are installing programs right now. Computer programs where? In the event that the bank becomes insolvent or gets near to being insolvent, and they see any increase in people trying to withdraw their funds electronically, they see a couple percent increase, and they're going to bang. Computer is going to trigger automatically, and it's going to shut everything down and seize the funds on behalf of the bank. Now, I'm not telling you, it's not a news report that I've read. I'm just telling you, it's just logical. It would be one of those things where...
But then again, how good are all these computer programs? I mean, it's almost like anybody and their brother can hack into things nowadays. I mean, there was new info coming out today. Was it the Department of Defense that was hacked?
And I don't know. One of the military branch of the military. I saw that, and I can't remember which one.
The Pentagon social media accounts. Where they posted names, addresses of U.S. generals, which makes you wonder why the Central Command has Twitter and YouTube sites. You know,
I mean, really? What are they thinking about?
Certainly not what's important. Like
marching off to war with my Twitter account. We're not going to shoot the enemy. We're going to Twitterize them, or maybe Facebook them or something. If you guys shoot at us, we're going to put you on Facebook. So there. The whole thing becomes nuts. But you get caught up in it, and then somebody hacks into it, and people complain about it. I don't know. But the point behind the big point on this business with the bail-ins is that you don't own the money in your bank account anymore.
No.
Point one. Point two, your money, even if you did own the money in your deposits, even if that were true, there's not enough money in the FDIC to back them up in case of a general bank failure. There's a lesson in this. Everybody's got to, or most people need to have bank accounts. You got to have a checking account and a MasterCard and that sort of thing to get by in this world. But how much money do you want to keep in that account? How much money do you want to keep under your mattress, or better yet, in a jar full of gold coins? We're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom. Financial Survival will return in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We're going to continue our Mint State 61 $20 Liberty or Mint State 61 $20 St. Gaudens, certified by NGC or PCGS for $1,375. This is only $75 over what a gold bullion eagle would cost. And, of course, if you buy two or more, there's free shipping that you will receive. And so these are great prices. I looked up the numbers for both the $20 Liberty and the St. Gaudens and Mint State 61. And there was only, if I can find the numbers here, 265,000 of them to be certified by NGC or PCGS, Mint State 61. For both coins, the Liberty and the Saints, that's all. I mean, that's an incredibly low number. And what are you laughing at, Al?
I am laughing at one of the instant messages from Frank. It's not my fault. It's Frank's fault.
Well, you really should be paying attention because these are really good prices on this certified $20 gold piece. And you can own these pre-33 gold Mint State 61 Saints and Liberties for $1,375. So it's a great buy. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
Okay. And now what?
Well, I'll tell you what, this isn't going to make you laugh. New York City today, they launched its municipal identification card program. It's the largest in the country, which will allow immigrants living in the country illegally to access key city services that they were previously unable to obtain.
Well, that's important because we want people to be able to come into this country.
Yes.
Like welfare and housing subsidies and one thing or other like that as quickly as possible. You just come on up here and we'll get the people who live in this country to support those of you who want to move in.
This will help them. Advocates believe having this photo embedded cards may make immigrants feel more part of the community. For those that lack any documentation, it'll help them feel more comfortable seeking help from law enforcement. They said the cards also may help the elderly, the homeless, and the members of the transgender community who
Important. We've got to do that. Are they going to help any of the straight people who actually work for a living in the city of New York?
You know, and the part that was, you know, here's this guy. He's 40 years old. They list his name. He said he had to wait in line for more than an hour today to get to at the library to apply for his ID. He has a job at a quality control job at a Brooklyn factory. He said the ID would come in handy for jobs, banking, insurance, for everything. He says, thank you for the opportunity. He's a native of Columbia who has lived in New York for about 15 years. If you can't get any ID in 15 years and you're here illegally, how can you be working in a factory at a quality control job? I mean, it's just like...
Ask Obama. I mean, if you think it's remarkable that somebody's here illegally and gets a job in a factory, how remarkable is it that someone who may have been born in Kenya has got a job in the White House?
But to prevent any possible stigma that the ID is only carried by immigrants who are in the country illegally, now we don't want to make sure that they don't have any stigma. The city has created an incentive program to entice all New Yorkers, regardless of their immigration status, to get a card.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't have anything against identification cards per se, but there's a problem with them that most people don't understand, and I don't understand clearly. But it appears that by virtue of taking a lot of the identification cards, you accept certain liabilities, duties, and obligations that are not inherent in being simply a man who lives in a particular state. When you take that driver's license, you take obligations that essentially diminish your rights. All right? When you take some of these other identification cards, it would be fine if you wanted just to have an identification card where all it did was identify who you are and where you live and all that. And that's what they seem to do. But over the years, what I've come to believe, suspect, and perhaps understand is that when you take those identification cards, they diminish your status. They change you in a way where you don't have the same rights you had before you signed on the line on that identification card. So there is at least a possible and perhaps probable disability that's attached to these cards, and I guarantee you that whatever cards they're handing out in New York City, it's going to diminish the people's rights relative to the local government. It's going to put them in a situation where they are more subject to regulations, control, oppression, they will have less rights. It's a virtual certainty that's true. I can't say it's God's truth, but I'll bet you that that's the way it works out. These identification cards, they're so, oh, they're going to do so many good things for you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It'll be convenient, and you'll avoid the stigma, a bunch of other stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can bet it's a scam being hoisted off on the people by the government. I got an article here from ZeroHedge.com, just brief. And the headline is Gold Hits 1235 as Commodities Crash to 12-Year Lows Amid $45 Oil. The only other time that Bloomberg's broad-based commodity index has fallen so far, so fast, was in 1999, before the stocks crashed, and 2008, before the stocks crashed. At 12-year lows, the raw material of the world's economies is flashing a red warning sign that all is not well. West Texas Intermediate crude oil traded at $45. Copper prices just broke below $6,000 per metric ton for the first time in 5 years. And he asks, which oversupplier will get the blame for that? You know, we're arguing that we have an oversupply of crude oil, and that's why the price has fallen. But what he's saying is, look, this isn't just oversupply. This is diminished demand, and that signals that we're in a global recession and perhaps global depression. Don't mention iron ore, steel, aluminum, which all hit new cycle lows. Amid all this turmoil, gold just broke to $1,235, its highest in a month. Now, he's got some graphs here and the rest, but the point is this. Gold is resurging, at least for the moment, as commodities are at 12-year lows, and this indicates something. It's not proof. It's too early to say this is proof, but it's telling us that while other commodities are falling in value, gold is actually rising, which suggests that investors are no longer treating gold as a commodity. It's not moving downward with commodities. It's moving upward with fiat dollars. Insofar as gold continues to rise and commodities continue to fall, it's evidence that an increasing number of investors are looking and say, this is not a commodity, this is money. And it becomes more valuable during a period of deflation. For the moment, gold is the number two money in the world. The number one at the moment is actually a currency, not money, but it's a fiat dollar. And it's done the most, it's grown the most in value over the last 6 months. But gold has basically tagged along. Gold is only down a little relative to the dollar, where other commodities are down more substantially. It's evidence that people are beginning to say, wait a second, that shiny yellow stuff, it's not just a commodity, it's money, and I want some. Melody, are you still there?
Yes, gold has always
been... Got to hit your mute button, don't you, Melody?
Gold has always been a great indicator of markets, and certainly it's the canary in the mine. And when we see the prices move along with a stronger dollar, certainly it also tells us that things are, you know, there is something wrong. And it certainly does bring a little more recognition. And we certainly see the flight to the bonds as people reach out for thinking the bonds is a safe place to go. We've certainly seen that yield drop like a rock of late. And as you see people going in there, so, you know, naturally we're going to have that rise in gold. And so, you know, again, the signs are all there if anybody cares to look, mm-hmm. and if anybody cares to prepare. And certainly, you know, I hear it all the time. Well, I'm going to wait until gold goes down. I'm going to wait. How much lower do you want it to go? I mean, this is low compared to where gold and silver are headed in the near future.
You know, we've said it for years. I mean, half of investing is just having the courage to make a move. You know, it's people who are waiting for it to go lower and lower and lower are also, once it starts going higher, they're going to wait until it comes back lower and wait until they finally get to a point. And they say, you know, I could have bought gold when it was $12.35 an ounce.
So I'm not going to buy it at all.
Yeah, well, and one of the implications is that the people who profit from these markets are those that are intelligent enough to understand the fundamentals and perhaps lucky enough to make good bets and good guesses on this thing, but you got to act on it. If you don't have the courage to act, guess what? You are going to be left behind. So it's not an easy thing because it's hard to know always where is the price of gold going to be. You know, a lot of people sincerely believe it could fall lower than the rest of that, but we're at a point where we can't say it's true just yet, but we can begin to say that gold is rising. And it's kind of taken three steps forward and two steps back, and then taken three steps forward and two steps back, and so on. It hasn't taken off like a skyrocket, but on the other hand, it doesn't look as if the downtrend is likely to continue that we've seen, you know, during the last couple of years. It looks like we've finally established a bottom, point one and point two. Looks like it may be going up. We'll watch and see. Too early to say, but not too early to suspect. All right? And it's one of those things you look at, and you've got to have, what do you think? You know, you have to have the courage to trust your own capacity to decide, is it going up, is it going down, what's it going to do? And then you have to have the courage to act on what you believe is going to happen. If you believe it's going down, well, don't buy anymore. But if you think it's going back up and it's likely to, and it's likely to continue to do so, you know, you're going to have, you either jump in now, or you're going to sit back and wait and wait and wait until you finally are kicking yourself in the butt and saying, look, I could have bought that one. I could have bought gold when it was $12.35 an ounce. I don't know what I was thinking about.
Well, the folks in Greece are doing what they think is important ahead of their election. I believe their election is in about 2 weeks.
25th.
A little less than 2 weeks. Yeah. And so they're beginning to take control and showing how they might be voting.
Yeah, they are. We've got a line. We've got a headline here. Greeks stop paying taxes ahead of elections as central bank scrambles to halt bank run rumors. All right. In what appears to be a desperate attempt to boost confidence in a failing financial system, taken right out of the 2011-2012 playbook, over the weekend, the National Bank of Greece loudly announced that the situation with deposit outflows from the country was under control. You know that's not true. It's like when it's when the government assures that they have complete confidence in somebody. That's generally a signal that he's not going to hold office much longer. It tried to reassure markets ahead of the January 25th snap election that everything was okay. Don't worry, be happy. This January 25th snap election is going to determine which party is going to control the Greek government thereafter. Will it be the current party that has held office for a while, or will it be the new Syriza party, which is against austerity and against repaying the Greek debt? Now, in the midst of this, Greek tax remittances to government, which were almost non-existent to begin with, have ground to a halt. The implication here is that the Greek people are voting with their tax payments. They're telling us how they're going to vote on January 25th. They don't want to pay the existing debt. By withholding their taxes from the Greek government, Greek people imply that when the snap elections take place on the 25th, less than 2 weeks from now, the Greek Syriza party will win and the current Greek party will be defeated. And more importantly, once the new party, Syriza, comes in, they are presumably going to move to cause Greece to withdraw, exit from the European Union. They're calling it the Grexit, Greek exit. Whether the EU and whether the European Union can survive the Grexit is debatable, but the EU will certainly be impaired as Greece seeks to repudiate some or more of its 400 billion euro debt. Right, which probably translates into, I don't know, $440-50 billion. But they don't want to pay their debt. I'm not sure how much they might be willing to pay, but they don't want to pay much of it. All of which says the European Union has problems. In another 2 weeks, they'll have even more problems. We'll take a break for some commercial announcements. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, you were talking about that you thought, Italy and Spain had an unemployment of 40%.
Well, that's what I saw in one article I read earlier today. You know, I don't know that for an absolute fact, but that means that if that's accurate information, that means both Spain and Italy are powder kegs waiting to explode. You can't have 40% unemployment. They're clearly in a depression. That's the implication. There's no question about it. 40% unemployment. You're in a depression. If the Greeks manage to exit the European Union and they succeed in repudiating their, what, 300 billion, is that what I said? 300 billion 300, euro.
400, uh-huh.
400 billion euro debt. If they repudiate some or all of it, I'm going to guess that Italy, the people in Italy and the people in Spain are going to say, you know, that looks like a good idea to me. Let's cancel our debt and get out of this union. It's not doing us any good. We were speculating during the break, could the powers that be force Greece to stay in the European Union? And the answer is probably not. It depends on how close the election really is. If it turns out that the Syriza party wins by 51-49, or at least that's where it would be possible to maybe steal that election by controlling the electronic voting mechanisms or the ballots or however they're doing voting and however they vote in Greece. If it's a close election, it's possible to steal it. On the other hand, if it turns out that 60% of the Greek people are voting to get out of the European Union and 40% are against that idea, there's a 20% difference, and it strikes me that it would be extremely difficult for any government to falsify the election results where the Greek people would believe it. If 60% of them want out of the European Union, you're going to have to just let them go. Because if you don't, they're going to riot, they're going to set fire to banks and public buildings, and I don't know what all is going to happen, but they want out. And if there's 60% of them who think we got to go, they're going to be, all right, fine. It's either that or impose some sort of military dictatorship. And I don't think anybody wants that. I don't even know if they can do it at this time. And I'm going to guess that something similar, you could make a similar observation concerning Italy and Spain. It depends how many people, if they see Greece gets out of the European Union and Greece gets to cancel its enormous debt, both Italy and Spain are also in significant debt. They had a chance to cancel that debt, get out of the European Union. I think there's a good chance they'd want to do so. And if a significant percentage of the people of Italy and Spain said, that's it, we're out of here. Not 51% as compared to 49%. But 60% as compared to 40%. 60% said, we're out of here. I don't think you can stop them. So we'll watch and see. I don't think that the Greek exit, if it takes place, I don't think that all by itself is going to cripple the European Union. I don't think that the refusal to pay 400 billion euro or perhaps 200 billion euro, I don't think that's enough to put the European Union out of business. But it's going to happen at a time when they're clearly vulnerable. The European Union is under a great deal of financial stress right now. It's not going to be good news. The question isn't so much, will Greece by itself be enough to take down the European Union? The question is whether Greece will set an example that will cause other countries, notably Italy and or Spain, one of them, both of them, to say we're out of here. You know, the European Union may survive the loss of Greece. Could it survive the loss of Italy? Could it survive the loss of Spain? And not necessarily Italy and Spain, but just one or the other. You look at it and you have to say, interesting times.
I'm not even so sure they could withstand even the loss of Greece, as little as it might be.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just wait and see. Yeah. In 2 weeks, we'll know, or shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you wonder with what's going on in France. Certainly, you know, there was 3 days of nonstop news coverage of the situation that they had in France. And then as of yesterday, they had millions that turned out. And this to show they were not afraid of terrorists. And I couldn't figure out what that is all about, whether it was just a union of the New World Order to show.
Well, it's because a couple of terrorists broke into a French
publication. Well, I get that, but I look for the deeper.
Killed a dozen people.
Well, I get that, but I always look for a deeper meaning.
Well, I think the deeper meaning here is this. It's not just about the people who got killed. It's about the French who are sick of seeing their country being invaded by foreign immigrants. This is an expression of nationalism. And it might not be that everybody in the country agrees with this, but I'm going to make you bet that this French nationalism underlies allegedly 1 million people marching through the streets. That's a pretty impressive. That's a pretty impressive number. This isn't just about 12 people got shot.
No.
Okay. But this is evidence that the French have had enough, and the immigrants are maybe not. They're not going to be more immigrants coming in, and there may be a lot of immigrants that are on their way out. And this is
this reflects the idea.
Jobs are disappearing in France. They're under enormous financial. They're under enormous financial stress. And they're looking at this immigrant, and they're figuring, this guy's got a job I could have.
I agree with the people, but yet you have their leaders showing up along, participating. You have the guy, you had Netanyahu, you had the guy from Palestine.
You didn't have Barack Obama,
but you didn't have,
or Eric Holder.
And I thought he was supposed to be replaced, Eric Holder, and he's still sitting around for months after he resigned. So, you know, I couldn't figure. And the thing of it is, during all this reporting, I heard that there are actually no-go zones on the outskirts of Paris where you have these Muslim territories that actually practice Sharia law. So you have this massive demonstration of solidarity, or along with the politicians who created and who still want that immigration, and yet they do nothing about the problem with these no-go zones.
They want to tear these nations apart.
Absolutely.
The biggest obstacle to a new world order is nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
There are people in France who don't want to be part of Germany or part of England or part of Italy. They like being French, just as there are people in this country who really don't want to participate in a new world order and be welded to Mexico and Canada into some economic union and say, no, I like the United States of America. That's what I want to be. This is something that they're trying to defeat. This is part of the reason for this massive immigration that takes place in Europe, takes place here in the United States. They are endeavoring to destroy one of the fundamental pillars of nationalism. And that is essentially the same race of people. For centuries, you defined a nation as a single race, a single religion, a single language, a single culture on a limited territory. Those were basically the five pillars of a nation, a strong nation. They want to turn this nation into something that's been a mass of little nations. They want no-go zones. They don't want the state of Texas. They want an administrative district that's populated by little areas, and you got little Italy over here and little Algeria over here, and someplace else you got little Uganda. It destroys your capacity to act as a nation. It destroys your capacity to resist the New World Order when you're busy struggling with people that are living just down the block from you. So I see all of this push for immigration, illegal immigration. Governments around the world are doing it. I mean, what's happened to England? They've got a song, England Isn't England Anymore. That's what we're talking about, and they are working to destroy the cultures of the Western world by bringing people in from third world countries. And the reason they come is because their culture, their religion, their people are incapable of producing some sort of a semi-decent standard of living and some measure of prosperity. And they say, why don't we go to where these Western countries are, which Pat Buchanan, he was the first to make this observation, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 years ago, I'm not sure when, but in one of his books, he said, when we talk about the Western world, what we're talking about is Christendom. We are ultimately talking, when we talk about the West, we are talking about those countries that were built on Christian values. And this is no small thing. The Muslims can't put a decent working society together that's likely to hold together. They are using a religion and a culture that has a lot of ancient attributes that are not conducive to an effective culture. You know, the Muslims, they were spectacular intellects back centuries ago. They invented algebra, and there were a number of really astonishing technologies that they developed. They don't do that anymore. I've seen one report, they only produced a couple dozen books. in the last year. They're no longer an intellectual people. They're no longer capable of intellectual creativity. And there's reasons for that, and part of it goes to their faith. One of the things about the Muslim faith, I mean, this is an enormous disability, and it's an enormous, it's an incredible evidence that their faith is not valid. The Prophet Muhammad married his first cousin. And ever since then, Muslim men have sought to marry their first cousins. And the result is that the Muslim population has been so inbred over centuries. We're not talking about 50, 60 years. We're talking about several hundred years. But now they are genetically impaired. They can't hear as well. They're more prone to being deaf, more prone to stillbirths, more prone to child deformities, more prone to disease, more prone to mental illness. It goes to breeding with their first cousins. This is a serious problem, and it may explain why they had been once profoundly intellectual and capable of great intellectual achievement. Now they can barely write books. It's evidence. It's hard to look at that. And this is reports of at least two studies out of Europe within the last 3 years, the genetic consequences of interbreeding in the Muslim community. And this is no small thing. It impairs their ability to survive, to support themselves. They become kind of a disease vector. And the point I wanted to make more than anything else is, if God really favors the Muslim faith, why would he allow them to subject themselves to behavior that is caused them to be mentally and genetically impaired? You know, in the Jewish faith and the Christian faith, you don't marry your first cousins. It's been an established principle, if not dogma out of the Bible, it's at least an established principle. We don't marry our first cousins. We need a little genetic diversity to keep getting stranger than circumstances are perhaps compelling us to be. But you don't marry your first cousins. We know that. Muslims don't. Why would God allow the Muslims to marry their first cousins if it were true that they were the chosen, you know, that was the chosen faith? Instead, they are the impaired faith. And this becomes evidence that their faith is arguably false. We're out of time. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back mañana. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
Seems to be a single penny left for me.